Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
Welcome to another edition of, oh man, this one's bent, Geek Cave Comics. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad.
Boys, I feel I may have overused my creativity on last month's intro. No matter how hard I try, everything I come up with just sounds like Joe Quesada wrote it. So, welcome to comics.
And nobody liked that marriage anyway.
I'd like to thank our sponsors.
Calm Blue Ocean.
This has been another guided meditation from fucking all industries.
Sorry, Justin. Please carry on with the sponsors.
While Darren takes a few minutes to compose himself and not kill Chad, I want to thank Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today, with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old-school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, comic book marriages that happened, didn't happen, sort of happened again, didn't happen, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. You okay there, Darren?
I'm good. I'm good.
And Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. And when you're done, just send it back in the postage paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever and pay a lot less than in-store prices. And they just updated their rewards program so you can stack up to $20 in coupons towards any purchase. Sign up for your free 30-day trial right now at the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Yeah, so you can keep the games as long as you like, which, you know, lasts longer than Peter and MJ's marriage.
I knew that there was something coming. There was a pause. There was enough of a pause where I'm like, here, all right.
You didn't talk, so I had to fill the space.
Anybody been doing segment. Anything? It's your segment.
There is always a pause.
Darren.
Yes.
Gotten your fingers in anything lately?
Y'all ever heard of Snoo Snoo?
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
Be gentle.
It's Darren's first time.
Motherfucker, I told you be gentle.
Welcome to Darren's First Time, where I have a fling with the first issue or storyline of a comic that I've never read before to see if this is going to be a long-term thing or if I'm sneaking out the window in the morning. Or, you know, just deleting the comic off my iPad.
With the
new She-Hulk series now on Disney Plus, I figured now was a good time to check out the adventures of a jolly green giant lawyer who broke the fourth wall constantly way before Deadpool made it cool. That's right. She did it first. You appropriating piece of crap. Let's talk about the sensational She-Hulk Volume 1, specifically the 2004 Dan Slott run that the Disney Plus series is loosely based on. Unfortunately for She-Hulk, she's been canceled and renewed more times than... well, Robin.
Peter and MJ's marriage?
No, I think that only happened once.
That hasn't been renewed yet, so.
Oh, yeah.
Now, at this point in the career of Jennifer Walters, who, if you don't know her backstory, long story short, blood transfusion from her cousin led to her being a Hulk, but with more control. Or less, yeah. And the ability to speak directly to the audience. But at this point, she's been She-Hulk for a while, and she's, frankly, taking a few too many liberties with her status as an Avenger. She loves her life as a publicly known superhero just a bit too much. See, we see her routinely park in no parking zones and puts a little card on her car that says she's on official Avengers business, and that keeps her from getting parking tickets, that kind of thing. She'll hook up with underwear models regularly because big and green and curvy in all the right places, makes it easy for her to do so. She'll throw massive ragers after every superhero victory. She helps the Avengers in space in one mission early on in the book. And as they fall back to Earth, you know, she's like, just someone please catch me. And on their way down, she's like, so, party at the Avengers Mansion. And thus, a party happens at the Avengers Mansion. But she's doing
I would, too, quite honestly,
if you could, yeah. But she's doing all of this on the Avengers' dime. And she never reverts back to her human form. In fact, there's one scene early on where she wakes up next to one of the underwear models as Jen and has to freak out a little bit to hulk up, catapulting this dude out of the bed because she didn't want him to wake up next to poor, pathetic Jen Walters. She sees her human side as weak and useless compared to, you know, Bachow, if you will.
Bachow.
Yeah. And she's also a rock...
That is a technical term, folks.
Yeah. Now, Jen's a lawyer, in case you don't know. So she's also a rock star in the courtroom, but she ends up being fired by her law firm at the end of issue one after her opponents successfully argue that she biased the jury in her favor in their most recent case because she left in the middle of her closing arguments to save the world, thus doing all of the jurors a personal favor.
You know, the thing is I buy that argument.
Yeah. Oh, that's the thing. The writing is great here. She's also kicked out of Avengers Mansion for her excessive lifestyle. In fact, Captain America and Wasp have to have an intervention. Like, look, Jen, you're an honored member of the team, but we need you to get out. That kind of thing. Now, just when she hits rock bottom, she gets a job offer from one of the most prestigious law firms in New York City, but there's a catch. She has to head up their superhuman law division as Jennifer Walters, not She-Hulk. Now, this leads to some great visual gags, such as Jen finding out, and this is, I love this. Jen finds out that Marvel comics are admissible in a court of law. How so? Well, they have the seal of the Comics Code Authority on them, which is a federal office, thus making them all official federal documents and admissible in court.
Oh my Zod.
There's even a throwaway line where she states that, yeah, the Marvel comics that they have in their, they call their file room the long boxes. So just FYI on that.
Yes.
But it's,
so we can expect a long box on the long boxes?
Maybe. I mean, the first volume's on Hoopla.
Sure.
But... But she also kind of drops the knowledge that these comics are all based on tales that either the public witnessed or the superheroes verified. They don't get a cent from the comics, but, you know, it's just kind of funny. There's also a great storytelling beat from the time that Jen's colleague convinces Spider-Man to sue J. Jonah Jameson for libel over the years of his dirty, you know, editorials. But that ends up unwittingly dragging Peter Parker into the lawsuit as well because of his role as a Daily Bugle photographer. And so Spidey has to settle the case to avoid having to pay himself in damages.
Oh.
Just, yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know. another great moment is, oh, by the way, the settlement is that J. Jonah Jameson has to wear a chicken suit and hand out flyers of a public apology for the day. Which is pretty great.
Comics are weird, man.
Comics are weird. Another great moment is when Jen manages to use testimony from several superheroes who have died and come back to life in an attempt to convince a judge to allow a ghost to testify in his own murder case.
This is all in...
First volume.
First issue.
First volume. So, like, I read the first volume, so it's six issues.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel better about this.
Okay, good.
Because I thought that this was all happening in like one.
Oh, no. Sorry. I should have been more clear. This is the first volume of Dan Slott's 2004 run. It all comes to a head when we learn that Jen's new boss has a secret. His granddaughter is the supervillain Southpaw, a teenage girl with a giant gauntlet on her left arm, more or less.
Right on.
And he manipulates Jen into not only getting her out of prison, but into She-Hulk's protective custody. There's also a jailbreak along the way where a bunch of supervillains get shrunken down using PIM particles and they hitch a ride on She-Hulk's hand, only to be literally torn to shreds when she scratches the back of her hand.
Hmm.
Guys, She-Hulk has always been a lot of fun as a character. And the fact that the comic is more than willing to revel in its ability to combine interesting courtroom drama storytelling with zany superhero action led me to a new appreciation of an already great character. Plus, I like me some strong women. So I'm definitely going to be coming back for more green goodness.
Okay.
Short answers, read it.
Green goodness, okay.
Green goodness.
Wasn't that one of Darkseid's henchmen?
No, that's Granny. Granny goodness.
Oh.
Also green a strong woman, if you think about it, Darren.
She is also a strong woman, voiced by the late, great Ed Asner.
Hmm.
This is true. Moving right along. Chad.
Yes?
What you been up to, buddy?
Well, so I took a bit of a break from some of the comics to go back and watch some old Batman cartoons and introducing my child to the 66 series. And
as you do, yeah.
And came across one in the animated series, and I guess I have kind of a, well, maybe a stupid question.
Oh, Chad, there are no stupid questions.
And now it's time for Chad Savage's stupid question.
So Batman has one of the most extensive rogues galleries outside of the Flash, right? I mean, yes. It's just huge. And there have been some weird ones, and we were introduced to Condiment King.
I love Condiment King.
And yes. Condiment King uses ketchup and mustard for his ranged attacks, and he uses mm-hmm. hot sauce packets for close quarters yep. combat. Mm-hmm. But other than his puns, why doesn't he use relish?
On a supervillain's budget, certain ingredients are a little bit out of the price range, especially if you're a B, C, D, E, F, G tier supervillain. And I mean, I'm going to need to research this a little bit more to make sure to find out his financial status, but I think it's because it's a little too expensive.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Condiment King in season 2 of Harley Quinn is great.
Mm-hmm. Condiment King's just an excellent idea.
It's a wonderful idea.
I mean, the whole thing was just a great big gag.
Yeah.
Kind of the spiritual successor of the 60s villains.
Loved it.
In the middle of Batman the Animated Series.
The pickle helmet.
It just didn't belong, and it's just so funny. Second favorite of the animated series Batman villains, easily.
Oh, cool.
The fact that he is an unlockable character in Lego Batman 3 thrills me to no end.
Yeah. He's really entrenched.
It's one of the few redeeming factors of that game.
Such a shame. 2 was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 was really good. Darren, did you read any more of Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths?
I would, if the main titles would drop. I'm waiting for issue 4. I read the Green Lantern-centric one, and it was fine. It feels like a lot of these big crossover titles, I'm just waiting for the last 2, you know? And then everything will start coming together, and it'll be good. Right now, it's just fine. I did read something really good, though.
Oh.
For my birthday, my spouse, Lori, you might remember her from Retromantics, she picked me up Nightwing Rebirth Deluxe Edition, Volume 1. So it's essentially an omnibus of like the first year and a half of Nightwing after the Rebirth thing took place in DC. And it does a lot of work kind of course correcting from some of the New 52 stuff. I mean, he's back to being Nightwing. He's not a super spy anymore. He is.
He's not Grayson.
He's not Grayson or Agent 37. He has a. I know.
Sorry.
I know. He has a talk with Superman. Who? Just a preface. Chad already said comics are weird.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who haven't been playing along at home, this was a period in time where the Superman from the pre-Flashpoint/New 52 universe had somehow ended up in the post-Flashpoint New 52 universe, but there was also a Superman that was a New 52 Superman, but that one died, so this one came out of hiding, and he's the classic Superman, but nobody trusts him because, you know, we just saw our Superman die, and now there's another one. And this is before Superman Reborn happens, when then they merge.
It's like when Coke came out with New Coke.
Yes.
And that lasted for a while, and then they brought back Coke Classic, and everyone was like, what the hell is this?
Yes.
You know what my thought is on that? The original Coke, not the one with cocaine, but the one before New Coke.
Sure.
Used sugar.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola Classic uses high fructose corn syrup. Mm. I think New Coke was supposed to be an awful tasting thing to get you to, so that people forgot what original Coke tastes like, because they are different. Drink Coke from Mexico that is made with sugar versus Coke from America that's made with the other.
Okay. Well, Discord, just a heads up, I'm going to refer to New 52 Superman as New Coke Superman from now on.
Awesome.
So that's the thing. But anyway, New Coke Superman is dead. Classic Superman Classic. No, Superman Classic from Mexico is back.
Nice.
I'm getting my soft drinks mixed up here. And it's a great bit of continuity from all the way back from Infinite Crisis. Justin, you may remember where Earth 2 Superman is trying to convince Batman that, like, hey, all the people from my planet are better. We'll just bring Earth 2 back. And Batman asks, what about Dick Grayson? Mm-hmm. Is your Dick Grayson better than ours? And he says, no. Flash forward to all this. This Superman Classic from Mexico goes to Dick because he realizes that he's going to need the approval of someone that everybody trusts. And he goes straight to Nightwing. And this great conversation that leads to Nightwing going to Bloodhaven and setting up shop in this universe for the first time. Long way of saying it's a great little team-up comic. And nice. It kind of, once again, reestablishes that Nightwing and Superman are friends. And that Superman got what he referred to as the Nightwing bump. Whereas if Nightwing signs off on someone, everybody trusts them.
Yeah, that tracks.
There's some adventuring with a guy from Dick's past named Raptor, who knew Dick's mom, but not in that way. And Raptor ends up being a bad guy. What a surprise. Totally didn't see that coming. The Court of Owls are here, and now they're gone. But overall, it's a really good read. Nightwing consistently is one of the better books in DC, except for that period of time where Nightwing wasn't Nightwing. And I'm not talking about Grayson. I'm talking about Rick.
I think they had guest writer Quo Jasada.
But yeah, that's all I've been reading because it's a thick omnibus, but I've enjoyed it quite a bit.
Good, good. So before we proceed into other endeavors, which may or may not pain Chad, I'd like to take a minute to sit right there and tell you how I became the president. No, sorry, I can't. folks, listen to this.
Extra Life was born. It just occurred to me that gamers should be able to do the things they love to help sick and injured kids as well. And so the funds that Extra Lifers raise can go to a variety of purposes in the local area at the local hospital.
So maybe your extra $20 or your extra $50 goes to curing 87% of children with leukemia.
62 kids like me enter a children's hospital every minute.
And I was one of those kids. You could save their life too.
Play games, heal kids.
Donate and learn more at geekcavepodcast.com.
All right, now that we've got the the good out of the way, Kent.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Prepare yourself for Justin's long box. Yeah, baby. Extra long.
So last month we talked about the many Archie crossovers, and that got me thinking about other crossovers. Specifically, DC Comics and Looney Tunes.
Yes, I knew this would happen eventually. I'm so excited I can't even say the word happen. Go ahead.
So, in the 2010s, late 2010s, or maybe it was a few years ago, I don't know, time blurs together. DC and Warner Brothers, which are really the same company, teamed up and produced a handful of one-shots of teaming up Looney Tunes characters with DC superheroes. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but I'm going to talk to you about a few of them. So the first off is The Legion of Superheroes meets Bugs Bunny. It's the 30th
it's the
century.
The only thing that could save the Legion of Superheroes.
It's the 30th century and Supergirl is dying. The only way to save her is to find an extinct isotope. Luckily, it's not extinct in the time of Superboy, the Legion of Superheroes friend and part-time member. They send Computo 2 back in time to collect him. Unfortunately, it brings back Bugs Bunny instead. Before they can figure out what happened, they're attacked by Validus. Bugs scarfs down one of his power carrots and becomes Super Bugs. They defeat Validus and figure out that Computo 2, who's in love with Brainiac 5, doesn't want Supergirl saved because he's in love with Brainiac 5, who's in love with Supergirl. It self-destructs, and the Legion uses Bugs' last power carrot to revive Supergirl. Yay!
Okay. Yep, all right, I'm tracking. Yep.
There's also at the end, there's also a giant golden statue of Superboy and Bugs Bunny because, you know.
That was actually the reality that got punched.
Infinite Crisis, look it up.
Next up is Martian Manhunter meets Marvin the Martian.
This also makes perfect sense. I'm on board.
John Jones picks up a Martian distress call. Rebuilding the teleportation circle that brought him to Earth, he tries to help. Marvin the Martian shows up. Apparently, the distress call was scrambled, and it wasn't a call for help, but an offer for help to destroy Earth. Marvin goes on a rampage while John tries to stop him. It all comes to a head at Area 52, legally distinct, where John uses his one and only special mind control skills that all Martians have that they can only use once in a lifetime to make Marvin think he succeeded, thus neutralizing the threat until the teleportation circle can be repaired and Marvin is sent home.
Okay.
You okay there, Chad?
I'm just concerned about the battle strategy of the Martians in being wiped out in the first place.
Yeah, well, they don't go into that. So next is Wonder Woman meets the Tasmanian Devil.
This was the announced one that gave me pause the most.
When did they announce this?
Yeah, right before they started issuing them.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it really happened.
I believe it. Justin's going to tell me about it.
Yeah.
And all of you listening at home.
Yeah. During her youth, Diana tested her worthiness by battling a major guardian in the Minotaur's maze. It apparently covers the entire globe, not just the one area that's talked about in Legend. And it has many guardians. Facing down a few lesser guardians, such as, you know, walking skeletons, she ends up in Tasmania, where she faces the Devil. Soothing the beast with music, she clips some hairs from it and returns home. In present day, Circe attacks the Mascara and turns the Amazons to stone. Diana escapes into the maze and seeks the Devil's help to find the amulet that will reverse the effects. Taz remembers her and is a little angry. Not because she took some hairs, but because she stopped playing the music and it upset him when she left. Pout. The two make their way to the center of the maze and battle the Minotaur, get the amulet, defeat Circe, and save the day. Also, Taz gets to wear Roman armor and looks freaking amazing. Because in this one, he's as tall as Wonder Woman. He's not the short, stout little Tasmanian devil. He is as tall. He is easily six foot tall.
Or is Wonder Woman 2 foot nine?
I was hoping for a cameo. Go ahead.
Either way, it's proportioned very nicely.
I was hoping for a cameo with like the dad and mom and sister from the series Tasmania. Underrated.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Next we have Lobo meets Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner.
Yep.
Picture it. Nevada, 1949. Acme Labs has been doing research with alien DNA on animals because, of course, Nevada, 1949. Yeah.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
The newest capture is a coyote. Just before all the animals are setting to go into stasis, there's an explosion and all the modified animals escape. Apparently, the coyote picked his lock, made homemade nitroglycerin, and boom goes the unstable liquid explosive. Over the next 70 years, we see the coyote go after and fail to catch the Roadrunner. That was also in the lab. The coyote is finally captured by the government. Here he learns he can talk and hijacks a rocket to track down Lobo, a bounty hunter. Lobo will help, but only if Wile E. goes after his current bounty. We see Lobo try and fail to catch the Roadrunner. Vis-a-vis Wile E. Coyote-esque
sure.
tricks and repercussions. Wile E. goes after Lobo's current bounty, Kilowog of the Green Lanterns. He fails.
Of course he does.
Wile E. ends up back on Earth and cancels the bounty on the Roadrunner, vowing to become more of a pacifist. However, as the Roadrunner barrels into him again, we see that he has stolen a Green Lantern ring and smiles. Boy, is he going to be bummed when he realizes there's no lethal force with the ring.
He just needs to catch it.
That's true.
can't use the ring to kill him, but I can twist his head until it breaks.
Although, which Green Lantern mythos are we dealing with? Because lethal force was authorized in the Jeff Johns run.
That's true, but I don't think it's there.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
Too easy.
Batman meets Elmer Fudd.
This is the one I know.
Elmer Fudd is out for blood. He thinks Bugs, the bunny, has killed Silver St. Cloud, the love of his life. Bugs, in an attempt to escape, tells Elmer that he was just a hired hitman. The person who put him up to the hit? Bruce Wayne. Well, Bruce Wayne, but you know, Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne.
Elmer goes to Wayne Manor during a party, sneaks in, and shoots Bruce. Soon, Batman goes after Elmer, because of course he does. After a short fight, Batman learns that Silver, his former lover, and Batman learns that Silver, a former lover is his, was also in league with Elmer, and they form an alliance to get Bugs. At the bar, they take down human variations of every Looney Tunes character before finding Silver alive and well. Apparently, she left Bruce because he was too dangerous. She found Elmer, but he too proved dangerous. So rather than just leave, she faked her death. She leaves, and Elmer and Bugs and Batman share a round of carrot juice.
I don't have anything to say.
Yeah. Catwoman meets Sylvester and Tweety.
Okay.
Witch Hazel makes a bet with other witches, saying that if this particular bird can survive till dawn, all cats and honorary cats will cease to exist. Honorary. If the cat can eat the bird before dawn, all birds and honorary birds will cease to exist. Enter a very realistic-looking Sylvester and Tweety, like, you know, normal size cat and, you know, bird size. Sylvester gets help from Catwoman, and Tweety gets help from Black Canary. The two heroes begin to fight on behalf of their animal counterparts. This also brings in all other cat and bird-themed heroes and villains to the fight.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yes. It doesn't matter. All of them.
It doesn't matter. Birds aren't real.
Okay.
they find out where Hazel is and threaten her to forfeit the bet, thus saving everyone. In the end, Sylvester goes to live with Black Canary, and Tweety becomes Catwoman's new sidekick.
Don't show him that scene from Batman Returns. Or do. I've never been a Tweety fan.
Duly noted. Now, this was not the first crossover between DC and Looney Tunes. There was actually one back in 2000. It was a four-part miniseries, Superman and Bugs Bunny. Mr. Mitzius Pitlick is once again terrorizing the folks of Metropolis. While at the exact same moment in a different universe, Bugs Bunny is helping Gogo the Dodo restart his dimension hopper. Superman tricks Mitzi into saying his name backwards as Gogo makes his own journey. The two cross paths and compare notes. Mitzi, hearing Gogo's world doesn't have any superheroes, thinks it'll be easy to take over. Unfortunately for him, the Looney Tunes are crazier than he is. Out of annoyance, he kind of ties up Gogo and sends the Looney Tunes to the DC universe to cause chaos. And this sort of works. But why stop there? Mitzi takes away Superman's powers and gives them to Elmer Fudd, making him the last son of Krypton. And giving Batman's powers to Daffy Duck, making him the Duck Knight. More chaos ensues as Mitzi and Gogo begin to fight, causing the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Crisis.
The Crisis on Infinite Earths. The JLA and the Looney Tunes are pulled into another dimension and do battle with Toy Man and his various robots. They win, and Gogo brings everybody to where Mitzi is. Bugs tricks Mitzi Spitlick into saying his name backwards by suggesting he write all of his exploits down on www.killtipsyzim.com. It is not a real website. Do not go there. This causes him to go back to the fifth dimension. Gogo sends everyone home, except for Michigan J. Frog, who ends up in Perry White's office.
I want to see that story.
So,
yeah.
So there is everything you never wanted to know about the various DC and Looney Tunes crossovers. I want to thank our sponsors again, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly. Be sure to check out our other shows. You Want Me to Watch What? The Week 3 podcast, The Sporadic TLDRs, and on YouTube, Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. Look us up on social media, including Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, and Discord. Links for all can be found at geekcavepodcast.com, and say hi when you get there. Be sure to tell your friends about us. We're on all your favorite podcast services, including Good Pods. And now here's your out-of-context comic panel. We see Ghost Rider, or should I say, Ghost Baby. Ghost Rider is a small child in a flaming baby stroller, wearing a little bonnet on his head, swinging a cat around like it's a rattle, and says, I will hunt for vengeance after I find somebody to change me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
For Kent, Darren, and Chad, I'm Justin, and this has been the Wonderful World of Comics, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.